have further conversation.
Yeah.
Finance Committee will come to order. And it's going to be an interesting day, I think. For some of the members that are on the Education Committee, the Education Policy Committee, they sat through a marathon session the last week. Just an enormous number of bills that have gone through Senator Wieger's committee. And so many of those bills, I was actually in a couple different meetings yesterday, last night, while your committee was meeting, environment was meeting. And
transit.
It's not like they're taking up non-controversial bills either, like reopening the wetlands discussion and things like that. So I think as everything kind of shakes out over the next week or so, it's going to be interesting how we're going to be able to handle and process everything. But I applaud the endurance that your committee has. It's a challenge. This morning we have until 10 o'clock, so I think we do need to move forward, and I realize we don't have a quorum yet, but we have several proposals. Senator Clark has Senate File 319 relating to teaching, professional teaching standards. Oh, I just heard that we may have beyond 10 o'clock if we don't quite finish, so okay. Welcome, Senator Clark. We do have session at 11, though.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome, and to your guests.
We know we have a full agenda, so we will try to be concise. I'm very excited about the people we have with us this morning. We've been spending time thinking about how do we both help our students achieve better outcomes and about professional development. And the National Teacher Certification actually combines both. It is a very rigorous certification process. It takes a long time to get through. It is hard to get through it. And the teachers who complete it, who become certified, really do see both a difference in their own professional lives, but their children, the children that they are teaching, see some fantastic outcomes. One of the studies that is out there has talked about that essentially that students whose teachers have become certified, who've made it through this rigorous process, gain about a month, a whole month, over other students. And as we keep trying to find more time, this is a good way of looking at it. Right now, our state does not provide any support or assistance for teachers going through this process, but many other states do. And it is somewhat expensive, and it is time-consuming. And so what we're trying to do here is to create a bit of a partnership and some incentives, as it were, to be getting more of our teachers going through this process. The bill essentially does a couple of different things. It allows there to be $1,000 partial payment for the candidates' fees, for them moving forward and going through this process. For teachers who actually get the certification, they would be given a $3,000 grant. Teachers who get through, do the renewal, because you actually have to renew this, it's not a lifetime thing, they would get a $2,000 grant. And there's a couple other things that are in here, but the other piece that I think is important, it basically allows an FTE that could help with coordinating support, because there is a lot of learning that takes place here, and that's something that we can do to help facilitate moving forward.
Excuse me.
I'm going to go ahead and stop there for right now, Mr. Chair, because the more important thing is for you to hear from our teachers that are here today, and I'm going to have each of them, as they talk, introduce themselves for the record, if that's
great.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator Clark. And who would like to go first?
I'll go first. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing us to come and speak on behalf of the National Board. My name is Sherry Tamptey. I teach out in Buffalo. I'm a visual arts teacher. I was certified in 94-95 and then passed my renewal about 2 years ago. 10 years later, you have to renew during the process. In 94-95, I was a fairly new teacher. I taught about 4 years. My need at that time was to know how well I was doing. And although I have a master's degree in art education, this particular process, which took me a year to complete, was probably the best professional development I have ever had. And I'm one of those people who loves to go to school. I just go to school all the time. But looking at all of those experiences I've had, I've been to Harvard with Project Zero. I've been in a number of different places. This is still the best professional development. And that is because it made me reflect on my actions, on my teaching, on my classroom, on my students. And it's only when you're forced to look at your own practices in a very intimate way that you understand what you do and what you do well and what you don't do well. The other wonderful thing about that is that when I started to see how the assessment process that I went through helped me with my own teaching, my own reflection, I was able to turn around and use some of those same processes to help my kids improve their learning, to help their assessment process, to help them reflect on their own learning and growth. And so it was a way for me to process my own qualities, my own shortcomings, my own teaching, and a way for me to turn that around. My students, after I passed the national boards and after I'd been through that process, and I'm tooting my own horn here, but they started to win awards. They started to participate at the Bell Museum. They started to participate in ways and win scholarships because I think that they gained from my knowledge of how do you really reflect on what you're good at and then how do you get better at that. How do you know how what you're doing is well done? So thank you.
Ms. Tamp, is it Tamptey?
Tamptey.
Tamptey. Do you go someplace? Is it like a physical campus that you go back for a renewal, or is it done through?
All in your own classroom.
Oh, it's all
with
done
your own students and your own curriculum.
And that's?
Yep. The process takes over a year-long period. You're asked to submit 4 entries. The entries measure different things for each subject, but they're all about different aspects and the qualities of your teaching. So they ask you to look at your teaching over a period of time. They ask you to look at your philosophy and mission and some other things. You then take a one-day test in which there are, I think, 6. There's 6 areas this time. And during that time, you're asked to actually pretty much write and explain your teaching process.
Okay. And the cost, if we don't have a fiscal note on this because it didn't have an appropriation put in, but what is actually the cost for the original certification?
At this point in time, I think it's $2,500.
Okay, and that includes the, you know, the cost up to the certification?
That's the original certification, correct.
All right. Senator Olson, did you have a...
Mr. Chairman, I was just wondering, when you said you had to take a day-long test, how is that taken at home, too, or do you have to go someplace to take it?
You go to a Sylvan Learning Center. It's a computer-based test. Or computer, what do you call it?
Online.
Administered test.
Okay, a couple other questions, and I'm sure maybe some of this will come out too. How many teachers do we have certified in the state at the present time, and how many teachers do we have overall?
8.
I know that.
So okay, if that'll come out, that's fine. All right. Ms. Hayes?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you so much for asking us today. I feel sort of like the poster child because this is the 4th time I've testified in front of a legislative committee about National Board certification since the mid-90s.
Could you give your name for the record?
Sandy Hayes, sorry.
Thank you.
since I was the first National Board Certified Teacher and also the first National Board Certified Teacher in Minnesota to be renewed. Obviously, I feel that this is a very important professional development opportunity. In fact, I would say, and this is my 34th year of teaching, I would say that it is, without a doubt, the best professional development activity a teacher can pursue because it is geared to you personally. You don't have to sit through a workshop where maybe a paragraph of what the presenter says really talks about your kids. This is all focused on your students, your teaching, your development, how to be better, and even more important, what is it that you're already doing that's fabulous? We don't really look at that often enough. We always beat ourselves up, I'm not doing enough. But for me, one of the most inspirational parts of it was looking really closely at my students and seeing what clicked, seeing in the students, because when you're looking at 25 or 30 kids at a time, you don't see all the sparks. But when you videotape yourself, all of a sudden you see a lot of things that you didn't notice when you were busy teaching. The process for this involves a portfolio. Many teachers report that the amount of work they do in their initial certification is about equal to what they did to get a master's, because the amount of writing you have to do, the amount of reflection, the amount of studying of the standards, because it is standards-based, and all of the standards are particular to a subject area, which I also think is one of the strengths of this program. An art teacher like Sherry did not do the same portfolio I did as an English teacher because the needs of those disciplines are different. So the portfolios are developed by committees of national experts, including classroom teachers, including college professors, including administrators, including legislators. And the portfolios are developed and they're revised. The English, the middle level English, and it's also by level too. A high school English teacher does not do the same portfolio as a middle school English teacher does. They're revised also. The portfolio that middle level English teachers do is not at all like the portfolio that I did 14 years ago or whenever that was. One thing that I think is also important is this is what we hope for student assessment. Even though it is one portfolio, it is not one assessment. It is multidimensional. There are multiple measures. There are multiple sub-standards that you are demonstrating proficiency in. So it's not just a one, even though you get a pass-fail, it's not based on one particular day in your life. I really believe in what Einstein said, that not everything that counts can be counted, and not everything that counts, not everything that can be counted counts. But I think that the National Board process really follows that. Even though it is a counting, there are so many dimensions to it that you really get a picture of yourself as a full-fledged teacher and where your strengths and where your areas of improvement would be. And that's something I wish that we could even do more often than every 10 years. I also think that it makes us be role models for our students in that we're expecting high expectations of ourselves, and we're willing to risk to look to see, are our expectations being met, and are we meeting the expectations outside of our classroom? We sometimes get so insulated we don't know if we're doing a good job or not, and this is one way that we have of testing ourselves. With that, I really appreciate the amount of time that you have spent on this issue and that it keeps coming back. I really appreciate the interest that there is in this professional development that really, I believe, leads very strongly to better performance in the classroom for students and teachers.
Thank you very much. Are school districts using their staff development money to fund this? Or
Generally, no. The only district I know of off the top of my head, and know this personally because the superintendent has told me that, is St. Peter. Superintendent Jeff Olson has really supported a cadre of his teachers, and several of them this year have attained National Board certification. But I'm not sure to what extent he's devoted district resources to that, but I know that there has been real support in the district for that. Some districts have negotiated some financial incentives individually by their districts, but that's after teachers have attained certification. It isn't generally during the process. So, I with every district doing their own professional development, it's sort of hard off the top of your head to know if districts are really doing that.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Wergen?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of following up on your vein, this sounds like a good thing. Is there anybody here that can maybe answer why school boards aren't doing this out of the staff development funds?
We maybe have somebody here. Jan?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alswiger, Education Minnesota. The National Board Professional Teaching Standards process, the certification process, is more of an individual process with personal reflection and personal improvement. While it certainly could be a school-wide or district-wide staff development, it is really very expensive because we're talking about $2,500 per person. And how do you spread that across everybody? And staff development of our funds are generally used for building goals, towards building goals and district goals, and it becomes too expensive to take staff development money and go across the board. However, we think it would be a great way to have some kind of incentives to do something like this. There are just so many staff development needs in the district. It is also a voluntary process. I think if you force people and say, we want to use our staff development dollars and get everybody into this process, that you're not going to have the success that you do when you have individuals who are saying, I am going to commit the amount of time that it would take me to get my master's. I'm going to commit using my classroom towards this project. So I think that there are some reasons why it hasn't been used, but it doesn't mean that there couldn't be some efforts to use staff development towards this. And actually, I don't think we have a really good handle on how many, but I'm glad that she is understanding of the St. Peter situation.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could follow up. Ms. Osweger, I'm not very familiar with the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards, but is this something that if staff development dollars were invested with one instructor that could come back with something for the rest of the staff? I mean, or is it not that? I'm just not sure.
Would you like to answer?
Should I do that now? Okay.
Sure. Why don't you go ahead and give your testimony? Is it give your name for the record?
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Becky Gardsky, and I'm a first grade teacher in Hastings. In addressing your question, when a teacher chooses, because it is a voluntary process, when a teacher chooses to become a candidate for National Board certification, what happens is the first thing the teacher needs to do is look at the National Board standards. And there are 25 different certificate areas for the areas that a teacher teaches. For instance, Sherry's is different from mine, as is Sandy's, because we all teach different subjects in different areas. The standards are the criteria by which a quote-unquote good teacher or accomplished teacher is defined. And it's a very personal experience. There truly is no way that a person, that any of us who have gone through the process, could then go to our colleagues and teach the process. I work with candidates who are going through the process, and I have watched people truly learn to pick apart what they do, and that's what the National Board process forces a teacher to do. When I went through it, as I first studied the standards, and I learned them, and I looked at them and thought, okay, where do I fit in this? How do I measure up to this criteria? And there were areas that I thought I did fairly well, and some areas I thought I did very well, and then other areas that I realized, you know, I don't really do that much of this. You know, this is an area in the standards where I'm not hitting it. And if I want to be National Board certified, then I need to change what I do. And that's what National Board certification does. That's why people often say this is the most intense, the most rigorous, and the most personal staff development that any, or personal development, professional development that any of us can go through, because it really involves taking what you do every single day with every student, every parent, every colleague that you interact with, and every instructional decision that you make, and measuring it against the highest national standards that exist for our profession. And the bill talks about candidate support, and I would really strongly consider, or I guess ask you to truly consider that. School districts don't have the funds to do it, and it doesn't work when you try to do it with a whole group of people. But as I've been able to watch teachers learn to reflect on their practice and to analyze their actions in light of best practices, people change. And the way that we're changed stays with us forever.
Thank you. One question. In the legislation, Senator Clark, on the first page on 1.14, this is the eligibility is directed to those that have 5 years of teaching experience. Could you just address that? In the booklet and the information that you handed out, it talks about 3 years. So why the difference?
The National Board for Professional Teaching Standards requires that a teacher have 3 years of experience, because the first 3 years of teaching is pretty much survival, and until you learn to survive and manage groups of children, it's really hard to take that time to reflect and analyze what you're doing. So much of it is automatic pilot at the beginning because you're just trying to get through, and that's why.
Okay, but
Mr. Chair,
Senator Clark.
The reason why it's a 5 years is there had been a thought among the people who have gone through this process that while you could do it at 3 years, that you actually would have been a better teacher and have more to reflect on, that you really should be more at that intermediate level and past kind of your beginning phase. There's no reason why we couldn't change this to 3 years if that was the will of the committee. But the thought really is that let's have people not just get past that initial transformation, but have had some time to really develop some skills, gone through some of what the districts would have had to offer, and then be able to really go through this rigorous process. But we certainly could go to 3 years if that was the will of the group.
And I would assume that the largest percentage of the fallout is in that first few years as you come out of college and start teaching and realize that, well, this isn't exactly what I want.
50%.
So if you had a great investment in, I mean, an investment in certification, you probably want to be sure that this is something you want to do.
Ms. Allswiger is reminding me, Mr. Chair and members, that we don't have a shortage problem of getting people to come in. It's a retention problem, and that about 50% of the people, teachers, leave in the first 3 years. So we definitely want people, so we've got both that retirement issue coming up, and then we've got the initial retention. And so I think if you're wanting, as people have been talking so far today, it's focusing on the voluntary nature, because you want people who are going to take this very seriously and really want to raise their teaching to a totally different level than perhaps those who may not be taking the time. That's not to put anybody else down, but this really does require a real personal commitment. It's not just a financial resource. It's a real personal commitment to change.
Okay. Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the three teachers, I see there's $100,000 for a coordinator and facilitators. How would that have changed your process? I mean, you went through it, but how would that have affected you had someone been coordinating and facilitating?
Mr. Chair and committee.
Ms. Tempty.
In anything that you do that's new for you, it's wonderful to have somebody to talk to about it. And so if there's somebody who can make sure that you're staying on task, on time, helps you talk to other people about their best practices, make sure you answer the questions, that you know what the questions are, that you understand what you're going through. Somebody to provide moral support. You know, there are some midnight nights there. You're sitting there just wondering, oh, my gosh, am I really doing the right, you know, what they're being asked me to do. And so just to have that support, I think that you'll find that many more teacher candidates
will be successful at passing.
We also have, I think, Ms. Schwab. Did you want to comment? Oh, Senator Walshwager?
Mr. Chair, I would be very happy to join you at the table and vote.
Mr. Chair, I want to know where she lives first.
That would be Senator Gerlach's area. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to address Senator Scogin's question as well. I was a field staff person in the Rosemont Apple Valley School District, and I was able to see a group of only three teachers go through this together. And they did not have the financial support that Minnesota later on created. And the three of them would get together once a week, and they would talk about what they were doing. The exciting part about this is it is so infectious, and they started talking about their teaching and how it was changing, what their kids were doing in their classroom. They did then find this group in St. Paul. St. Paul teacher totally on her own said, "This is so important. I received my certification. I want others to do this." But she could only do it for so long on a voluntary basis because it was so much time. But she brought in teachers, and they had meetings about what they were doing in their classroom, about this whole process. If you put in the support, $100,000 for the support, you get one person, and it's a requirement that they be nationally board certified, you get one person who understands the process, you get three facilitators so that they can be outstate. We have 288 national board certified teachers in Minnesota. Most of them are in the metro area. We would like this infectious staff development process and discussion about what's happening in your classroom to be all over the state. And when you get that candidate support, it's helpful. I want to reiterate something that Senator Clark said. There are over 150 studies that have shown that the National Board Certification process shows a significant increase in student achievement. But what is most interesting about that is the most significant gains are made for those students who are more at risk. So this is a very good way to start closing the achievement gap. It's very possible that Mr. Kite would like to testify in support as well because of what he has seen through this process.
Before we do that, Senator Clark, do you have any idea of numbers?
Currently this year, 9%.
Mr. Chair, members, the estimated amount that would make the most sense, depending upon budgetary ability, would be $2 to $3 million. But frankly,
is
moving forward,
per year or
biennium?
I believe so. We have to check.
Ms. Allswager would like to check, but I think that if we can get going on this, that an amount that helps us start moving forward and creating a partnership would be a good step forward. Having the money for support, making sure that we can be in partnership with at least some teachers going through this process would be a good place to go forward.
So if I understand, is it $2 to $3 million per year or per biennium?
Biennium.
Okay, biennium. All right. Okay, we'll go right down the line. Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me, as I've carried this legislation before, I think we at least had it in the Senate bill before, and I thought we had funded it for some time or had gotten some money for it. Could you refresh my memory, please?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, Minnesota for approximately 4 years had funding for this project, and that's when we saw the numbers go up. And then when we hit the financial crisis, that's when the money totally fell off the cliff. So the Minnesota legislature committed to it in prior years, but because of the finances, we don't have it now.
Please, Senator Werner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Allswager, or one of the teachers, is there a financial gain for a teacher? Like if they finish their national board certification, do they move in their steps or lanes so that they get some, in other words, they get payback through their salary if they do this in some ways?
Ms. Alschwager?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we did some checking. We believe there are approximately 16 contracts out of the 341, and I, you know, I'd have to do more research to make sure that number is 100% accurate. Of the contracts have some kind of financial incentive for those teachers who go through it. That incentive might be $1,000 a year or $2,000 a year, something like that. It is generally not very significant. And that the reason for some school boards and the administration have agreed to that is because they see this process as very valuable. In fact, one of the Hastings teachers told me recently that before any people were certified in Hastings, it was the school board's initiative to put that as an offer on the negotiations table because they felt that it was so important to try to get teachers involved in this. And it does only last, it only lasts for the period of certification. I don't think I've heard of anybody who, once you're certified, you get it forever. It's only for the 10-year process.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Alschwager, how big a fund does Ed Minnesota have for helping teachers pursue this national certification?
Ms. Alschwager?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we have committed staff time to go through the national for staff time to try to help as because we lost the state support for the coordinator. We had a staff person who was very involved in pulling people together, and that's how we had our financial support. We also have committed thousands and thousands of dollars towards other staff development projects along the staff development law. I mean, there's different ways to go. We felt that the staff development law at that time, when we had actually received money from the legislature, we committed additional money towards the staff development. We think that staff development, whether it's national board certification or using the current staff development law, is very important, and we hold it as a priority for our organization.
So Mr. Chairman, more of your effort is toward lobbying for the state to spend the money than it is for you to take use some of the dues that the teachers have been contributing to actually turn around and help them personally for this achievement.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, Minnesota is one of the few states that doesn't provide support for national board certification.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if any of the QComp dollars could be used or might be used to compensate teachers who have achieved this certification. You know, if it could be worked into the agreement or the contract with the districts that are going into QComp.
The problem is that there's so few districts that are actually in QComp. I'm sure that could probably be part of that plan, but I'm not positive. I don't know if anybody knows.
Mr.
Nauman?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, I think if it were part of the QComp plan on the front end, that it would be an acceptable use.
Senator Wergen, and then I think we need to move on. We have kind of a lengthy agenda here.
Well, Mr. Chair, just a quick question for Ms. Alschwager. Would Ed Minnesota consider matching the state dollars to leverage those and be able to help more teachers?
Ms. Alschwager?
Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, if we're talking about $3 million, $2 million, I don't think that we have the funds to do that. As I said before, we have committed thousands and thousands of dollars in actual expenditures and staff time to promote professional development. And as I stated earlier, many states are putting money in, most states are. In fact, I think it was Wisconsin and Iowa, they're not doing a $3,000 one time. Many states are giving teachers $1,000 or $2,000 each year. So our request is incredibly modest, and we did that because we just want to jumpstart the process, and we know that we're going to be, when you compare our state to other states, and if we were able to get this, it would be quite small.
Chair and committee.
I don't think anyone's really questioning the worthwhile effort of staff development. I think that's pretty evident that that's important. probably more important every year as our as the diversity grows and as the problems grow in classrooms and families and stuff. So we have Ms. Schwab, the Minnesota School Boards Association. Would you like to comment?
Mr. Chairman and committee, I apologize for being outside of the room. I ran into someone who remembered Senator Sams, and we had a very nice moment. He's greatly missed around here these days, so I apologize for not being in the room.
Could you use the mic?
I sure can. Mr. Chairman and committee, Grace Schwab for the Minnesota School Boards Association. I'm going to actually talk as a school board member. In our district in Albert Lea, we've supported our teachers with this program. It really does provide high-quality staff development. It was something we as a local board felt was very important to invest in. The problem with staff development and why, at least we view, you don't see staff development dollars going this way is because of the division of the 2% set aside. 25% goes to the district, 25% to innovative programs, and 50% to the sites. So it's difficult when you want to have initiatives from the board or initiatives that you want to involve more people to do this. This aid would certainly include this high level, and it is an individual process because even as a board member, I saw the portfolios they had to provide for us and the data they had to use to track their classrooms on it. And I don't want to disagree with the value of the program, but the present funding structure makes this very difficult to provide at school districts unless there's some changes.
Okay. All right. Miss, is it Hayes?
Yes.
Okay.
I would like to say, too, that the 2% staff development money is really not really even enough to provide all the staff development that's needed. Particularly, I'm from a small district, Becker, and we have just as many diverse needs, but our 2% isn't as big as bigger districts. So you're still having to provide those services for fewer numbers so that the economy of scale makes it more difficult. And so I would really be concerned about changes in the staff development percentages and the way that it operates, and especially so if money were used for a much more expensive and personalized service or opportunity. As I said, there's just not enough as it is.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Schwab, I wanted to ask you how you think QComp could work with this program. As far as bringing extra revenue to districts, it could potentially, I know there's not that many districts using it, but it could potentially serve it as an incentive to teachers to agree to bringing QComp into their district. Do you think that would be a possibility?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, that is an option I had not considered with the two programs as we go forward. The department's approval and having a plan that integrates this in for all teachers, I think these testifiers have been very articulate in saying the teacher has to be ready to do this, and the personal commitment of time and effort and even dollars they locally have to come up with on their own makes it not something every school district teacher will choose to do. And I think you see the high flyers here at the table. They can really document changes in their classroom and how their training has really improved things for those children. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure on a QComp district that you could get every teacher in your school to use this type of rigorous programming.
But Mr. Chair?
Senator Roebling?
Why, under a QComp agreement, would you have to agree that every teacher do it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, that's an excellent question. I'm not a specialist on QComp, but the department might be much better to answer that. But I think if the legislative wishes to do that, we need to make that clear that that's the way you want to see QComp grow and go forward.
I think we have a pretty good idea of this, and for right now, we'll plug in $2 million.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair.
That would be $1 million each year. And then do you have an idea of the percentages, like on line 2.21 and 2.25?
Mr. Chair, could you repeat the question?
On page, okay, I guess it's you have blanks on line 2.21 on page 2, line 25, and then also line 27. How would you like to see that money divided up?
These two are
here. No, down further. Just kind of filling in the blanks. Questionnaire.
Mr. Chair, it would be acceptable. I would like to get some numbers and maybe talk with Mr. Naumann and get you that information within about a half hour or so. Is that acceptable or
We'll still be here. All right. Senator Clark, do you want to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move that this be... I suppose we have to amend it in a moment, but I'd like to make the
Yeah, why don't we do
why don't we just
amendment?
Hold it?
Senator Clark moves it on lines 2.19 and 2.20 that $1 million be inserted each year. On that amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator
Mr.
Clark.
Chair, what's your wish? Do you want to wait to do the possible inclusion until after we get those numbers plugged in?
No, I think just we'll lay it on the table the way it is. We can
and that's so moved.
Put those details in if it goes in. So.
Then I move that it be laid over for possible inclusion.
Just for members' information, in 1999, the legislature had put $400,000, I think it was one-time money, and then that was the one year.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Nyman,
Council and I have searched the previous years, and we haven't been able to find anything else.
So that was for 2000, FY 2000. Okay, on Senator Clark's motion to lay Senate File 964 on the table, as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you very much. We have several bills, and I just want to take this opportunity before Senator Kubley comes up to we do have a quorum, and we think we have a good majority of members here kind of bring members up to date as to where we are in the process. As you probably are aware, no doubt, we've been trying to struggle with targets and figure out, you know, what we have to work with and what we kind of have a time frame that we're supposedly going to process our bills and stuff before the Easter break. And the budget chairs have been meeting. We've been fighting. We've been doing everything but taking each other's lives, I think. So we do have targets, and they're not certainly not as robust as I think any one of us wanted to see, and one that I think puts a lot of dampening pressure. I don't know if any of you ever walked into the shower and have turned the shower on and didn't quite know where the hot is. And even if you did know where the hot is, there's all cold water before the hot water comes and you kind of jump back. Well, some of these targets are like that. And
you go first, so. Mr. Chairman. You go first.
And all of you know, and I'm sure all of you have given this speech to a number of your constituents and groups, there's the impression out there that we have a lot of money, that there's more than adequate resources to cover the need. Obviously, in this committee and Senator Uyghur's committee, the needs are great. I mean, we saw in one night, you know, the night we covered special education, the need is tremendous out there. And so we have about $1 billion in one-time money, about $1 billion in ongoing money or permanent money. Of that amount, education can use someone one time, but not a lot. Most of our money is ongoing and permanent. And so we are the target that this division will deal with is $498 million, which in perspective is, to give you some idea, it doesn't cover inflation.
That's of the ongoing money?
That's mm-hmm. permanent money. And at this point, we're still, you know, actually we, you know, that's basically the target, both one time and permanent, but it, the 498 is permanent. Of that amount, like I said, it doesn't cover inflation. The other night when we had the discussion with special ed, that would come close to covering what, you know, the special ed needs across our districts. If we have been sitting here for weeks listening to proposals on for one need or another, just like the one we just got done with, and they're all, many of them are very, very good, legitimate needs. My sense says that if we want to, you know, we're going to struggle. Believe me, we're going to struggle immensely trying to address the education needs in the next 2 years with that target. And that's, you know, that's not a, I mean, that's not an understatement. I think that's a very true statement. We have district after district that's proposing cuts. And so I think we need to think long and hard about what can we fit into that number, and what does that mean for our districts back home? So I don't want to turn the cold water on completely, but I do want to kind of bring some reality back to where we actually are right now.
Mr. Chairman, did Senator you get Olson? An allocation for the one time also?
No.
That wasn't determined yet?
No, it's the one-time money at this point is still not totally sewed up, but because of the discussion with the capital investment and some of those things.
Mr. Chairman, this is out of $1 billion, $498 million. So it's almost half is going to E-12. And I presume that that is the biggest chunk of any of the divisions.
Senator Olson, that's correct. E-12 has the largest portion. I guess you could call that a success on our part, but I think that the troubling part of it is that we sit here and we see needs that districts, and it doesn't matter where you go or who you talk to, the district, the cuts being provided out there, or not provided, being done out there. I've talked to districts that are just the opposite, too. I mean, Elk River, where the growth is so fast, 700 students per year, new students, they can't build facilities fast enough. But most of the districts are just on the flip side, where they're having declining enrollment. And then the special ed area, where you can put 2% or 3% on the formula, and they end up losing more money because when you translate into the cost of special ed that's rising at 4.5% per year, and we haven't done much over the last couple years, you have roughly $500 million more or less that's coming out of the general fund or general programs to pay for the special ed. And so district after districts are, and it doesn't really matter whether it's the western suburbs or the inner cities or the rural school districts, they're all in the same shape. And that's what's really troubling. And I think last November, I think people were telling us, you know, to do something. They were frustrated with property taxes. They were frustrated with their schools. They were frustrated with a number of things, and that's, you know, that's what's really troubling, I think, for at least for me, and I think many of you too. So that I wanted to bring that information to you, and we'll be definitely trying to figure out how we can, what we can do, and how we can work to put a bill together. If that's, you know, it's not going to be easy. May even have to kind of look under the rug here and there to see where we can make some, you know, if there's some other stuff that we'd like to do. But with that, I'd like to go back to our agenda. Senator Kubley.
Happily.
Happily.
This may be the most difficult proposal that you have this year. So, with that kind of a lead in, Senator Kubley, Senate File 507.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 507 is a fairly straightforward bill. It would simply offer school districts that cooperate in the hiring of a superintendent a bit of an incentive to do that. It would be a savings, I think, to rural districts particularly that were able to do that and provide some of the much-needed funding that you've talked about for other areas of their curriculum or staff development, whatever needs they have. But with me today is Superintendent Lauren Hacker from the Canby School District out on the western edge of the state in Yellow Medicine County, and he'd like to share a few thoughts with you this morning.
Okay, thank you, Senator Kubley, and members, there is a fiscal note in your packet on Senate File 507. Welcome, Mr. Hacker.
Thank you, Chairman Stump. I just want to echo your insights into special education and the costs that education leaders have been bringing to the legislators. I'm very happy that you've been listening to our concerns about special education cross subsidies. Like Senator Kubley said, our needs in rural districts, when we talk about declining enrollment and talking about how do we provide services and continue to provide quality education for our children, sharing is something that everybody learns in kindergarten. Well, sharing of superintendents is occurring in a number of school districts, and I think your information packet shows you those districts. I've been shared with the Hendrick School District for the past 18 months. Whether that sharing will continue or not, I'm unsure. It's a difficult and sometimes contradictory role that you play with neighboring school districts. As you can imagine, if you had disputes between neighboring communities and you had over sewer and water or other issues, if you were a common administrator in two communities. So the challenges are many. It's not an easy job balancing two sets of constituents. As a superintendent, obviously having fewer superintendents is not really the greatest thing in the world either. Why do twice the work for the same pay? You know, all those things come in conflict with declining enrollment and the revenue that the district has and trying to make things work. The superintendents that are being shared with school districts, I think, should be really commended for their efforts. It's a terrifically tough job being a superintendent in one school district. Like most of my colleagues think, why do you think you can do it in two? To make that decision or to support those decisions, that's what this bill is about. It's about local control and local decision, and also about incentive to save money. And I think it directs some of that thoughts about reductions. How can you encourage people to reduce? And that's what this bill does. good, bad, or the otherwise, I think the sharing of superintendencies in Minnesota will continue just because fiscally it's the right thing to preserve programs for children.
Yep.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, Senator Kubley or Superintendent Hacker, I'm a little confused about what this bill is trying to accomplish. I understand that if each school district has a superintendent, there are costs, and I'm not sure what the average superintendent compensation is, but in the districts I'm familiar with, it's around $100,000 a year. Maybe it's less where in your district, but if you have two school districts, each with a $100,000 administrative cost for a superintendent, and you decide to combine and share that superintendent among two districts, there's $100,000 of savings right there. What is the additional $30,000 of aid intended to accomplish? If you're going to save $100,000 between two districts, what is the purpose of having $30,000 from the state go to those districts each, $60,000? I'm unclear about what the money is supposed to accomplish.
Can we just have Mr. Nauman explain how the bill operates? I think that might be in order first, and then.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think Senator Hahn kind of hit tangentially the point that it's for each district. So if you have two districts that agree to participate, both districts would receive $30,000 for this combination. And if you had three districts that agreed to participate together, you would have three districts that would get $30,000 or $90,000 for that cooperation. The fiscal note assumes that in fiscal year 2008, there would be 24 districts that would qualify with four created as an incentive. They have a flatlined four incentive for each year. So the growth grows from 24 districts in fiscal 08 to 36 districts in fiscal 11. Thus, the fiscal note has some increase in the total revenue or total aid that would be appropriated.
Okay, Senator Hahn.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd read through the fiscal note, and that's what I was trying to get at, is that it seems to me that there would be, on the part of school districts, a natural incentive, if they can figure out how to do this, that there would be a pretty significant cost benefit to do that. And what I'm not clear about is, what is the money going to be used for in addition to the savings that are already going to be generated by combining superintendency duties across districts? Is this $30,000 to be compensation to superintendents, or what is the money going to be used for, I guess, is my question.
Can I just ask, I mean, is primarily because the small districts are struggling financially, this would be a help? It's pretty much a grant, I imagine, to those districts.
My impression about the bill is an incentive for small districts to combine their superintendency. And that's what the additional state aid is for, Senator.
And it would be somewhat similar to, like, the cooperation and combination, where we put incentives to try to consolidate or to encourage districts to kind of get together.
And Mr. Chairman, I understand that, and I'm a big believer in incentives, but what I'm unclear about is that if you've got two districts each paying $100,000 for a superintendent, and you say, gee, if we get together, we could save $100,000, that's a pretty big incentive. What's the additional $30,000 supposed to do, or $60,000 supposed to do?
Senator Scogin and then Senator Shire.
Just to Senator Hahn, I believe it would be additional incentive. Additional incentive. I don't know if I'm speaking for Senator Kubley or not, but that's kind of how I look at it. Additional incentive to get the districts looking at that.
And I think there. The problem is that they're not running in the black out there. The small districts, and primarily the declining enrollment. And I think, as the superintendent Hacker mentioned, you have this kind of I hate to use the word parochialism, but small communities feel very, you know, independent, and then now they're forced to get together with the next town where they have had longtime traditional rivals and so on. And so kind of similar between Eden Prairie and Edina, maybe.
Can you imagine
those two districts getting together? Well, these small towns have the same problem, only when in rural areas, looking at the censuses over the last 20 years, the tremendous decline in enrollment, these districts have been hit quite hard. So the line at which to try to encourage them to get together with another town gets to be very difficult. And so we've come up with legislation like cooperation and combination and early retirement and severance and things like that to try to encourage districts to kind of consolidate. And I think another one that has been heard actually in conference committee and also I think we've heard it in education somewhere, what we call program funding. You know, if we have sparsity too, which is kind of a dealing with a program, but program funding, like if you want to keep a school in a smaller community, what are the essential programs that we should fund? And it might not make, I mean, the number of students might not be able to fund it. And I think it's also the reason we look at, like, technology, the ITV and things like that. So it's all about money, Senator Hand.
And Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. And I know, and particularly given your comments earlier about the great demand for different kinds of programs and the relative scarcity of resources. And that's what struck me, is that it seems like that there is a pretty strong incentive in place to say, let's share costs, and then to put an additional state appropriation into that when there are all these other things that we are agreeing are of great need. It's hard to get my I mean, I do understand incentives. I believe
I totally
very much
understand.
In the power of incentives, but I'm just unclear about what this additional money would accomplish in addition to the savings that would occur just naturally in the course of combining. So, all right, thank you.
Senator Scheid.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think if I heard what Mr. Hacker said, it's got a lot to do with the fact that you're doubling the responsibility, if you will, of an individual to be superintendent. And I don't know that you necessarily would double the salary. I mean, obviously, we wanted them to do this to save money, not to just repeat the same cost. But I think that you also want people, you want highly qualified people to be willing to take this job. And I don't know if they gave me another district to represent. I don't know. I guess I would never get extra money for that, but not around this place. But I was going to ask Senator Kubley and Mr. Hacker is consolidation out of the question in this situation with which you're most familiar?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, I think, we're looking at an area of the state that's very sparsely populated already. One of the counties that Superintendent Hacker serves, a school district in, has less than 6,000 people in the county. You have to begin to ask questions then about how long you can expect a child to ride on a bus, and it does seem to me that we're getting to the point in some areas of the state where when I lived in Montana, the state of Montana said that if a child had to ride on a bus for more than an hour and a half each way, you provided a teacher for them at their home. So the teacher actually lived with the family.
Wow.
And it was really a return to a form of rural education that we've not seen in this country for quite some time. But, Montana has certainly more geographic area than we have. But the population density of the part of my district that Superintendent Hacker lives in is about 12 people per square mile. Just for comparison, the state of North Dakota is about 8.5 people per square mile for the whole state. Senator
Kubley, I think up in South Cooch, it's one person per square mile. And I think we should initiate a new program. It's adopt a urban legislator. Invite him home for the weekend.
Well, Mr. Chair, and, you know, just a brief comment on Senator Hand's question. And, you know, I suspect that his comments are part of the reason you made the comment you did when we sat down. But, you know, I do think there's a certain pride in schools, too, and there are people who live in these rural communities who see the sharing of a superintendent as kind of the first step toward losing their school. And it's something that a lot of people fear in rural communities. They see their community in decline, and they don't want it to go any further. And so they're willing to, you know, try and hang on to their own people, you know, to maintain that as long as they can.
Senator Hand, can I adopt you, and would you come up to the winery?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, those are difficult questions. I was visiting with a superintendent just a week or so ago, and I think it was it might have been out in your district, Senator Kubley. They had a child that got into an accident or a car accident, and the special ed costs were more than they pay a teacher out there. So they had to lay a teacher off to cover the special ed costs.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a big event to throw one of those small districts into a tailspin. Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, and this discussion is, I guess, remindful. I know that you and I talked a couple of years ago about, and I know you've had a longstanding interest in trying to solve the problem or answer the question of what do we do to try to make rural greater Minnesota communities stronger. And I think you're right that the schools are a very central part of that. And I agree with you that we need to find ways to make the schools a strong component of rural community life. And I know we talked a little bit about, is there a different model that we can construct that would be a lower cost model? We talked about maybe a one-room school kind of approach, and I know there's even one somewhere up. Yep. Is it the Northwest Angle?
Northwest Angle.
But I think that as we go along this path, that I've gone recently and looked in detail at all the financial data of every school district in the state and enrollment data, and you're right, most districts are declining. And to try to find a way to bring some stability to those communities, we might spend some time looking at what other models exist that might be more affordable in communities that may not have the population size or density, and try to bring back that sense of our community and our school. And I just wanted to lay that out there. I know we've had some conversation in the past, and I would certainly be interested in working with you or anyone else on seeing if we can find another model that would be of help.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, I think you know, if you'd be willing to share some of your tax base with us, that might resolve part of the problem.
Well, and Mr. Chairman and Senator Kubley, I think we already do, don't we?
Senator Kubley, we need more. Senator Hand, we do appreciate the portion of the tax base that you do share with us very much. We would not survive in greater Minnesota without it, believe me. And we, I think, in greater Minnesota appreciate that many of our sons and daughters have come down here and have provided good employment for the economy in the metropolitan area. I think that our rural way of life out there teaches us hard work and good ethics and stuff. So,
absolutely.
I think that's what makes Minnesota a great state, is that we have been able to work together and to the benefit of everyone. So we appreciate that. Senator Kubley, the numbers on your fiscal note at first look quite high, but I'm wondering if all of the districts that currently share superintendents are on that list. I think some in my district one in my district is probably not on there. So we might have to get some more up-to-date information, and then also look at how this might be part of the small schools funding package, or how we might help some small schools.
Yeah, well, Mr. thank you for that, Mr. Chair. I suspect I have several school districts that are looking at a retirement situation, and frankly, the number of people willing to work as superintendents is not very high in our part of the state, and so they may be forced into an arrangement like this, even though they would prefer not to. So, you know, it does seem to me that there's going to be more of this in the future.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, can I move that, make a motion concerning this bill? Is it appropriate at this time? With the understanding that I think it may not end up being funded this way, but that there may be some way to work out additional assistance for some of these districts.
Senator Scheid, I think with what Senator Hand mentioned is I think the concern on the part of the committee is to try to see how we might be able to help in some way or some fashion.
So, Mr. Chairman,
in many of the small school districts that I've talked to, even funding special ed costs would be a tremendous help. So, I mean, however we do it, I think the concern on the part of the committee is here. So, Senator Scheid moves that Senate File 507 be laid on the table for possible consideration in the education finance bill. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you,
Senator Coogley, and thank you, Superintendent
thank you.
Hacker.
Do you want to do Senator Saxhog? He's got people.
Okay, yeah, why don't we take Senator Saxhog, Senate File 419.
Saxhog. We're going to stay here a while.
Caucus.
Apparently it's optional. I don't know what that means.
Senator Saxhog, you were here late last night. You were here early this morning. You've been spending a lot of time at the Capitol.
Well, Mr. Chair, as you know, and you're from rural Minnesota, there's not much else to do but be a legislator, so you might as well spend it here.
Is he saying there's nothing to do?
Well, I admire your diligence, Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today I'm presenting Senate File 419. This is a $400,000 grant, $2,000 each the next 2 years, and spread, and it's for the city. The school district IS number 4, McGregor, Minnesota. It's to offset the hardship that the district is going to experience due to a unique situation in declining enrollment. You have a couple of handouts that are before you, and I might preface the upcoming testimony with the fact that you'll note that I'm the author of the bill, but my two co-authors are Senator Scheid and Senator Metzen. They both have cabins in the McGregor School District. It points up, small school districts, and some of the tax base they do have is not as good as it may become. The other thing that I would say, and it really follows up what we've been just talking about in the last half hour, is that McGregor is in a beautiful part of Minnesota, but it's relatively isolated.
How far is he?
About 35 miles.
The closest city, closest other school district is Aiken, which is 35 miles away. And so you don't just jump in the car, jump in the school bus, and move to a different town. So,
well, Senator Saxhog, can't you just go across country?
No, this isn't like Northwestern Minnesota, where you can see 35 miles.
I was just thinking that if you get off the road, you're in a wetlands.
Yeah, yes. You are. Yes. Very, very little question about that. Anyway, Mr. Chair, with me today is Brett Sample, who's a member of the McGregor School Board, and Rick Herman, the superintendent of schools up there, and they're going to give some brief testimony.
Thank you, Senator Saxhog. Who's going to go first?
And Mr. Chair, we have two other school board members that will be available if needed to give testimony.
Mr. Sample? Is it Sample?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you on behalf of the McGregor School District for listening to us.
And please, before you start, if you could give your name for the
record. Brett Sample.
Thank you.
I'd just like to cover a couple of the bullets about our community. We are the ninth sparsest school district in the state. 63% of our students qualify for free lunches or reduced lunches, which is the fifth highest in the state. 24% of our student population is identified as having special needs, two times the state average. And our average per capita income in the district is only $21,100, which happens to be the 12th lowest in the state. We're land rich, tax poor, with Big Sandy, Lake Minnewawa, a lot of the lakes, the cabins, and that. Our land value's high. When you look at what we're bringing into the district, that's where we kind of hurt in the rural community.
Thanks.
Thank you. And thank you for putting together that fact sheet. It's pretty stark when you look at it.
Took a little bit of time.
Mr. Herman?
Thank you, Chairman. Rick Herman, Superintendent of Schools, McGregor. Thank you for, again, I would echo Brett's comments about thank you for listening to our proposal. I know we're in a world of hurt in education right now with funding and so on and so forth. What I would like you to look at or would like to talk to you about is just our trends over the last 10 years. That's that another page you've got there in front of you. In 1998, we were in statutory operating debt. We got out of statutory operating debt. And the trend, as you can see in the bottom, the ADMs, we've looked at 550. We're at 425 this year, and we'll be lucky to maintain 425 as students continue to leave the school system for a variety of reasons. One of them is the tax base and the lack of high-paying jobs or competitive wages. So we're looking at, because of a charter school going in down the road 4 miles, we're looking at a huge decline in enrollment. Our average enrollment's about 6 to 8% over the years. We're looking at the possibility of losing next year 60 students instead of a normal 15 to 18. We're looking at a possibility of losing 60 with the combination of our normal attrition, but also because of the charter school opening. On the top, if you look at where we were at the end of last year, we have a very small unreserved fund balance. This year we'll probably eat some of that away because of some of the other concerns you've already talked about today, special ed and some of the other things that with our high amount of special ed students, we have a large special ed budget in a small district. So we're eating away at that, and if we don't watch out and do some things, we're going to be looking at, right now we're looking at cutting up to $650,000 out of our budget. We've had round one cuts already, and we've cut $270,000 or reduced $270,000 of our current budget for next year, and we're still looking at other ways to help do that and remain fiscally responsible with our taxpayers' money. Thank you.
Mr. Herman, in visiting with some superintendents that are some other small districts, one of the toughest things that they're dealing with is that they're cutting teachers in the regular programs and having to hire teachers in special ed, and it's a very demoralizing thing that's happening, where the regular classes are going, class size is going up, and there's nothing that you can do about it. Is that what's happening too?
Yes, Chairman. Right now, our first round of budget reductions has been in the regular ed classrooms, so our numbers will almost double in our regular ed classes. And we've got some very small numbers. Our average class size in the elementary is about 18 to 1, 17 to 1. Next year we're looking at class sizes of 27, 28 to 1.
And the reason for that is we're laying off some of our non-tenured and very young teachers in order to compensate for what we've had to spend in special ed.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if I might ask about the charter school, is it is it in competition because they're going to provide something particular that you can't in your district? Can you just expand on that a little bit?
Sure. Thank you, Senator Scheid. One of the things that they are sponsored by Lake Superior College. No, College of St. Scholastica. I'm sorry. College of St. Scholastica and the Fond du Lac College. So one of the things they are aiming for is doing a lot of the open or online kind of classes, a lot of the college and the school types classes. Right now in McGregor, we have two teachers that are certified to teach college and the school. And because of our distance from a lot of spots, we don't have a lot of kids doing PSEO options at this point because we're so far that if they offer those like they are advertising they're going to offer, that's one of the draws for some of those students. So one of the things we have to look at, of course, is how do we compete with that and how do we keep up when we only have two teachers that are certified to teach any of those kind of courses right now.
Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, it just seems just a comment that it this is a case where having the opportunity to have a charter school in a community that's got such problems and with declining enrollment seems tough and like we're actually hurting the community. And I think that that's something that in future years we should talk about.
Well, Senator Bonhoff, I think if you look at the what article was it, or report was it, or the fastest growing?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Nauman,
I think you're thinking of the fastest growing expenditures report that the Department of Finance put together at the beginning of the session. And to the extent that you would like, we can have that copied for committee members.
If you look at that Department of Finance report, one of the fastest growing segments of expenditure in state government is charter schools. And building lease aid and all of the things that go along with it. And this very scenario is not unique. If you talk to Senator
Senator Higgins.
Higgins. Senator Higgins or a number of other people. And I think it does need to be reexamined because what's happening is it's just taking piece after piece out of our public school system when it's not actually in many cases running at an efficient level to begin with. I mean, you got declining enrollment, and then you got this on top.
And, Mr. Chair, it sounds like in this case there's some things that a charter school providing that this school district is not able to provide because of resources, but if instead of approaching it that way, we could approach it with having the conversation, what's missing, and then look at how can this school, what can we do to shore up their resources so they can provide what's missing, that might be a more efficient way to go forward than to say, oh, this is missing, and so therefore we need a separate school.
Well, the chain is very closely tied together. And if any of you have children in college, you'll realize that if your son or daughter could get 10, 15, 20 college credits at a reduced cost or very little cost, wouldn't you encourage that son or daughter to do that? I know I did for our children.
Mr. Chair, I have three in college, and I did encourage them to do that.
Yeah, and so what's happening is that the parents are responding to say, if you can get high school credit, you can get college credit, you better do it because that means maybe $5,000-$10,000 less than what you would have to pay or borrow later on. Senator Anderson first.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, well, and it begs the question of where is the charter school getting the money to do this? Is it the college that's really funding it because they have a built-in group of students that will be coming there. I wonder where they get the resources when the public school can't get those resources to provide online learning.
There's several places where that money comes from. The startup aid, some of it, it's federal. In fact, we actually put startup aid in there too. And then, of course, the state pays the lease levy. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you can put the finger on any one thing. I think it's a chain of things. When college tuition is as high as it is, our oldest daughter graduated maybe 10, 12 years ago, and at that time tuition room and board was about $7,000. They all went to the same university, Morehead State University. It was about $7,000. Now room and board is about $12,000. And that's only over a period of roughly, 10, 12 years. So the pressure has been to get those college student or those high school students as much college credit as possible. And so it's a host of things. Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, is that charter school up and running so you know how many students are going to be leaving your district to go to it? And is it just a senior? Is it a senior year or is it a multi-year?
And Mr. Chair, committee members, no, it is currently in process of being built. They are planning to open the doors with 65 students in the fall. They are out advertising for, students to enroll. It is a K-12 facility, so it's not just a senior high or an elementary. It's a K-12 facility.
Mr.
Chair, and what do you think you mentioned the linkage with college and the conversation that we've been having here. Obviously, if it's K-12, what do you think is the draw? Why would people leave your district? We've talked about the lease aid and the startup aid, but they don't get the charter schools don't get any more money.
Right.
They don't actually have access to all of the forms of aid that you do. So it isn't that they've got more resources.
Right.
So how can you? I guess I'm asking: have you examined how you might compete? I mean, if you had a good sell, they may not meet. They couldn't draw people away.
We're looking in, Madam or Mr. Chair, we're looking into some of those things. I think I'll go ahead and answer your question. I think it's been asked in a roundabout way: how are they being able to do some of the things they're able to do? One of the things is it's on the reservation in our community. So they've got some support from other resources that we cannot tap into.
Okay.
If that answers that question, I think that's floating out there.
Okay.
That's one of the things that is real tough to compete with.
Sure.
Politically, right. Correctness, it's tough to touch that one.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Did anybody else want to offer comments or anything? Just on the legislation, Senator Saxog, is the declining enrollment, the dollar amount, is that tied to anything, or is that the $200,000 per year? Is that,
general?
Mr. Chair, I think I'll let the superintendent deal with that.
Superintendent Herman?
Mr. Herman and Mr. Sample seem to have a pretty good idea of what they needed, okay. So I'm going to let them go. Mr. Chair, what we're looking at is if that would come to fruition, it goes into the general account to help us bridge the gap between where we are now and 2 years from now. A lot of times in charter schools, what happens is a lot of people jump, then they come back, and maybe more jump. It's kind of that grass is always greener on the other side. And then they find out it's just a different shade of green, so to speak. And so the hope is in the bill is to give us some money to bridge that between where we think we're going to lose and maybe where it's going to level out 2 years from now.
Okay. Senator Salzman.
Yes. A question for Mr. Naumann.
How do charter schools fund special education? Do they bill the resident school district, or is there a separate formula for special? And I'm sorry, I don't know this, but I just wanted to check and just clarify that.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Salzman, charter schools are subject to the new tuition billing system the same way school districts are, so it works in the same way, and that's part of the reason we moved to the charter school, the tuition billing system. Mr. Melcher at the department felt that this was an easier way to deal with the system, so they work the same way a school district does.
So just to clarify, Mr. Nauman and Mr. Salzman. Chair, so would they have a cross-subsidy?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Salzman, of course. Yeah, all school districts, charter schools, everyone is dealing with the same, cap gap that the school districts have to deal with.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. Let's see. Senator Saxhaug, do you want to make a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd move that we lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
And Senator Saxhaug moves that Senate File 419 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you very much for your good testimony.
Thank you.
Is Senator Lynch here?
Somebody from
just walked in.
Too. Yes, she just walked in.
Okay.
It must be nice to talk. Mr. Chairman, I think I have people that can't come back either. So
okay.
If we could do that, I think it's fine to do Senator Lynch. But
okay.
Yes, he did.
Can we
come Senator, a little further? Red Wing is not as far as Rochester.
Senator Lynch, why don't you go ahead with Senate File 783. I believe you have some people here from Rochester.
I do have some people with me. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to appear before your committee this morning. If my testifiers would come forward and join me at the table, that would be great. I'm trying to catch my breath. This is my fifth bill this morning. So hopefully I'm on the right page.
Some of us who are more senior are very appreciative of those freshmen doing all the work. Senator Jen Olson and I were visiting last night at an education committee and saying, looking down that long list of 20-some different bills, and we didn't find our name on many of them.
With that, Senate File 783 concerns staff development revenue. I bring this bill to you with a real unique perspective, and I, before I go on, I need to just make mention that immediately to my right is Chris Fisher. Chris Fisher, the chair of the Rochester School Board, and Brianna Blagg with the Rochester School Board. And I would be remiss if I didn't say that it is just a delight to be back at the table with the two of them. This is an issue that I bring a unique perspective to in that you all know that prior to coming to the Senate, I had the opportunity to serve on the Rochester School Board. And this is an issue that I know inside, outside, and both sides of the issue. Simply put, what the bill aims to do is, by statute, districts are required to set aside a portion of their funds for staff development. I strongly support staff development and am a huge proponent of staff development. I want the record to be clear on that. The statute goes further to dictate to districts manners in which those funds need to be allocated. And that is the provision of the bill that I'm aiming to give some relief to districts to support local control. School districts, your local school boards want to be accountable. They want and desire to support staff development efforts. And it was my hope that we give them the maximum ability and flexibility to utilize those tools in a manner that they feel best suits the needs of their individual district. And with that, I'm going to ask my testifiers to begin. And, Mr. Chair, I'd like to begin with Chris Fisher, the chair of the Rochester School Board.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Lynch and Ms. Fisher.
Thank you.
Give your name for the record, please.
Yes, Chris Fisher. And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I thank you for being here. I have to say I was just up on Tuesday in the House testifying for something. This is the first time I've ever done this. I found it to be quite interesting. And I do thank you for this opportunity to be here. Rochester School District has a strong history of supporting staff development. We have funded staff development at 2% every year in the years the requirement was even in the years the requirement was waived. In 2006, the Rochester School District received the Minnesota Quality Council Award at the achievement level, the highest award ever given a school district in a first-time application. The quality of our staff development programs played a huge part in the strength of our academic programs and the district-wide alignment of our aims, goals, and measures, which was a significant factor in this quality award received by the district. We believe that the way the money is presently divided by statute, 50% to the sites, 25% to the district, and 25% to exemplary grants, creates several problems in terms of effective use of the funds. At the time the statute was originally written, schools tended to operate in silos. Each school may have had a little different curriculum, site-based decision-making was status quo, and there was significantly less emphasis on district-wide programming. With the advent of state standards, state assessments, No Child Left Behind, and the alignment of standards and assessments, along with a significant increase in the mobility rate in schools, districts have gone to more of the district-wide systems of delivery, curriculum mapping, and sharing of information between classrooms, grade levels, and schools within a district. This is a very good thing for students and for teachers. The need for district-wide staff development has become an essential part of successful staff development to create strong, consistent teaching methods and consistency and quality of delivery. If the restrictions are taken off of these dollars, it would allow school districts to use the money in the most effective way possible and provide for local control of the needs of a particular district. A couple of examples. When we introduced our new elementary math and reading program in the district, our director of curriculum and instruction had to write an exemplary grant to receive enough money to be able to present some district-wide efforts to increase our staff development program and make it more effective so that we could deliver it efficiently and consistently to our entire staff. When state standards will be introduced for science, we would like to have the flexibility, perhaps, to do more district-wide staff development. And this is something that would also be determined by the district and the staff. We also need to do site development, but we want to make sure that we're consistent. When a program or curriculum is being introduced across the district, staff development through the district is a fiscally more efficient system of delivery, and it helps create consistency and quality in the education of our staff on the standards. It is crucial that we have the ability to operate as a team in a cohesive system to achieve our goals. From a fiscal standpoint, due to the structure of the school day and the contract, it is very difficult for sites to use up their full allocation of dollars each year. Our staff development program is embedded into the school year, running late starts and early dismissals 8 times during the school year to run staff development at the sites with site development dollars. Even with this, we have over $1.2 million in carryover at our sites that is built up over the years. Obviously, if that continues at 50-25-25, that will continue to grow, and we cannot access those dollars. At the same time, we struggle to meet the district-wide staff development programs because we are limited to the 25%. By providing more flexibility in the allocation of the money, we will be able to run our staff development program more effectively to meet the needs of teachers and staff. As I listened to earlier testimony regarding the grant program to promote professional teaching standards, I was struck by the fact that I believe this speaks directly to the issue to which we are addressing in providing flexibility and local control. need should drive the decision as to how to use the dollars most effectively, not an arbitrary 50-25-25 split. These needs will be constantly changing, and local school boards, in partnership with teachers and staff, should be able to make the decision as to how to use those development dollars as effectively as possible for quality delivery of staff development.
Ms. Fisher, on line 1.16 to 1.18, the language there that a district may waive this section, or this basically that the split, if they, the school board and the teachers decide to do that.
Yes.
Have you voted or brought this to a vote to waive this section?
We actually were going to 1 year, and actually because of efficiencies in our school system, we made $10 million in budget cuts, about 10% of our budget, the first year I was on the board in the year 2000. Since then, we have continued to make efficiencies to the tune of $14 million in our school budget. We also have run one operating referendum in the meantime. So at the time that we were going to ask for the vote, we actually were not in deficit spending. We felt it was very challenging to go to our board, go to our teachers and say, you know, we're going to ask you for a relief of this 1%. Keep in mind that as teachers, of course, they're going to hold very dearly to these dollars. And we felt that it would not be a very good time after we had made significant programming cuts over the last 6 years that we would go to the teachers and say, we really want to ask you to give back 1% of your money right now or some percentage or whatever, because that had actually been what something that we were going to do. We realize we have that flexibility.
Okay. If you have that flexibility, why don't you use it as a board?
Mr. Chair,
Lynch.
I believe that we're going to soon hear from Grace Schwab with the Minnesota School Board Association, and her comments, I think, will...
Maybe we've... Senate counsel maybe just gave me the answer. You can waive the reserve, but you cannot waive the division.
Oh.
How it's spent, and I guess that's...
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's right. And if I could, and I'm sorry I didn't say Mr. Chair, members of the committee the first time, you know, continuous improvement,
okay.
I'm working on that.
Let's move on and take the testimony of the others that you have there. We do have a little bit of a time constraint. So who would you like to have go on?
Mr. Chair, my testifiers will be brief. And Mr. Lundell is going to yield his time to Grace Schwab with the Minnesota School Board Association.
Mr. Chairman, members, Grace Schwab with the Minnesota School Boards Association. We support Senator Lynch's position and applaud her ability to bring this forward this year. This is a longstanding position with the School Boards Association, and I believe with the target for the Committee for Ongoing Funds that you shared with us this morning, this is even more important. With the new accountability that's put in by the Department for School Districts and staff, we feel that we need to be flexible enough to meet those challenges. And this division limits our ability to react. I think of when we got new technology at the school district. I was at a school board member there. It was there that, in fact, had to give training to all staff on it. And the sites didn't vote to use their money that way. So we, in fact, then had to find other dollars to fund it, even though that new laptop was in front of every teacher in the district. So it's just simply not workable, and we really need a way to be able to make sure these dollars are having the most impact for students.
Okay. The other question was is that you had one of the sites you mentioned had a reserve. Was it was that going to be? I mean, it just sits in a reserve, right?
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's
saving it for some.
That's something? Exactly right, and I'd like to go back. We did several years ago, and actually, in the first time of the budget cuts, we did ask for a reduction to 1% that year of our staff development dollars. That was part of our budget cutting when we did our $10 million. So we did do that one time. We were going to do it a second time. realized that we'd created enough efficiencies and we were doing okay, we didn't feel that we could. The $1.2 million in carryover is over all of our schools. We have over 16,000 students in 24 schools in our school district. And this is $1.2 million in carryover at each of those individual sites. We can't, that money can only be used for site development dollars. And we're working very hard, and we're talking to our teachers about, you know, administration is, about applying. We've given the direction from the board to say, don't be having just schools apply for exemplary grants if, in fact, they have site carryover dollars. We need to use these dollars up. I'll be honest with you, as a board, if we had realized this carryover was going to build up like this 3 years ago and we had the flexibility to not approve that 2%, we might have thought twice about it. We certainly didn't realize that our capacity to use these dollars, even though it's embedded in our program, it's difficult to use by the nature of how it's allocated out at that 50%.
Okay. Anyone else up there that would like to
testify? Chair, if I would yield my final comment time to Mr. Brad Lundell.
Mr. Lundell?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Schools for Equity and Education doesn't weigh in very often on things other than equalization and overall formula things, but this is something we've had a long, very much interest in the organization over the years. And certainly support Senator Lynch's bill wholeheartedly. A couple of points. I think the first thing we have to remember that this staff development distribution system was designed in the early to mid-1990s, well before the while the state standards were being developed and while the greater consistency of expectations was being developed. So I think that we have to revisit it, and I think that what Senator Lynch is doing is clearly a movement in the right direction. I think the other thing is that in response to your question about the waiver and things like that, I think the legitimate question is where the onus should lie. And staff development is negotiated now. There's a teacher representation on district staff development committees. I think that this is redundant. This distribution is redundant on top of that negotiated process. So I can't say much better than Ms. Fisher put it. I think that she did a very good job of outlining this, of the problems in the current system, and certainly support Senator Lynch's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. I believe Ms. Alschweiger, do you want to make a comment? And then we'll see if there's any questions. And
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alschweiger, Education Minnesota, we strongly oppose this bill. We actually think that there are some alternatives. You heard Senator Stump ask the question about talking to the educators about changing that amount that is reserved. I heard then the answer that, but it doesn't change that distribution. It certainly does. If you change that, if you have a discussion with the educators and you go from 2% to 0%, you have no requirement to allocate it in any particular way. If you change it from 2% to 1%, yes, the 1% that is reserved, you have to allocate it a particular way, but then that leaves 1% that is not reserved that you could allocate however you would like. So we think that there is, they don't have to use that money for staff development money, but they could. The issue really gets to whether or not the administration and the school boards want to have a discussion with the educators about quality staff development and if they value the opinion of the professional educators and the direction that they want to go with staff development. If teachers were to vote, because the law says the majority of the school board and the majority of the teachers have to vote to reduce it, I ask you this. If the teachers don't want to reduce that amount, what is that telling you? It's telling you that they have a very particular need for professional development. Because if they were to let some of that money go and spend it other ways, there may be money, more money available for salaries. This is a situation where Education Minnesota and our members strongly support staff development so that we improve the teaching profession and versus putting the money into salaries. You will, if teachers don't want to waive that money, then there's a reason for it. They have a need. and we strongly oppose any kind of change in this allocation. I think that one of our, if, Mr. Chair, if it would be okay, we have one of the teachers who's here in another bill that would like to give her opinion.
Senator Hand, did you have a question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, yes. I guess just a comment and a question. I know, first of all, I want to say that I very much support what Senator Lynch is doing, and I did want to ask at some point the chair of the board whether, absent this requirement, whether they would quit doing staff development. And my experience on a school board is that school districts have no interest in stopping staff development. I think what this really comes down to is a question of who gets to make the decision and whether that decision is going to be made locally or by the state. We have heard constantly testimony about how pinched districts are for funds, and yet we have a requirement that says you have to spend 2% of your general fund in a very prescribed way that leaves very little flexibility for special education or transportation or technology or all the other things that people have interest in. And the question is, do school boards have the interest and the ability to make a good decision with respect to staff development? And if so, why shouldn't we as a state give them some flexibility to do that? And so I guess with all respect to Ms. Alzweiger, I think that this is not a question about whether people value staff development. It's a question of whether that decision should be made by a local board in sensitivity to the kinds of local issues that they're facing. So I guess, Mr. Chairman, I very much support this directionally, and maybe Ms. Fisher could respond and just ask, if you didn't have this law, would you quit doing staff development?
Mr. Chair, members of the Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I do believe that we have shown a very, very strong commitment to staff development. Like I said, we approved the 2% in the year that it was not required. The issue here is not that the boards are going to stop supporting staff development. This statute still requires that 2% of our dollars must be used for staff development. I thought it was a very creative way, that 1%, 1% thing. We hadn't thought about that. And so all this is saying is give us local control, take off the 50-25-25 so that we as a district, in coordination with our teachers and staff, who we value greatly, and we value their opinion, and we want to support every effort toward staff development, let us decide together what's right for Rochester. Let Wayzata decide what's right for them. Let Maple River decide what's right for them. That's all we're asking in this, not that we're stopping any type of staff development.
Yes, is it? Ms. Fisher?
Yes.
No, I'm sorry. Please give your name.
I'm Sandy Hayes.
Yes, Sandy. Okay.
I testified earlier about the national certification. I'm also a member of my district's and my site's staff development committees. I'm very surprised that Rochester has such a large reserve, because we certainly don't find that case in Becker. In fact, our committee always is trying to find more money, because people come up with so many good and worthy projects. There are so many needs out there. I think maybe with the district committees having control over the staff development dollars and ultimately the programs, I think under this proposal what it seems to me is that the teacher's voice has the possibility of being much diminished. And we certainly have valued that voice and have shown ourselves to be very strongly in favor of directing our own professional development in ways that support district initiatives. So I really wonder why their requests aren't being handled at their local level, because there is local control.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hayes, in the years where we were under a terrific budget crunch, I was one of the people, as you may well know, that advocated for not having to fulfill the 2%.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what this does. This just gives flexibility for how the money's used. It's not going to take anything from staff development without your vote. This strictly talks to the 50-25-25 and almost takes away the flexibility that you're talking about.
Actually, and perhaps their local committee runs differently than ours, but those decisions are made at our local committee, because even if it's a district initiative, sites have a say in, they can beef that up also. I'm sorry, I didn't say Mr. Chair,
and
I didn't get recognized.
Senator Wergen?
But, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I'm not meaning. I'm just trying to figure out, because what you almost just said doesn't match up with the law, because you can't have the flexibility in those decisions under the law the way it is. There's specific percentages that have to be spent in each area where you would have the flexibility without this language.
I think what we'll do is...
Mr. Chair.
We have two bills left to be heard, and we'd love to get those done before 11, because we have people who have come to testify.
Mrs. Bly?
Yes, very shortly.
Mr. Chair, briefly. It will be very short, I promise. I think I can ease the mind of the teacher that just spoke. What we're talking about would exactly give the teachers a little more say, because what we're finding is, whether it's administration in the sites or whatever, the teachers are still having to apply for exemplary grants. And there's not enough dollars in the exemplary grants when we have to set aside 25% of it there, when our teachers are the ones that are having to apply for it. Our cabinet directors of curriculum instruction, who would be providing staff development district-wide for all teachers, elementary teachers in the new reading series, to be trained. And so, however, these sites have accumulated a $1.2 million, which was more than the 50% allocated to them the next year. We're not really sure, and that's what's being looked back at. But why are the teachers having to exhaust all the exemplary funds when the sites have the ability to give the teachers what they need? So in my opinion, and what I think the school board in Rochester feels, is this does give more voice to the teachers, because instead of having a very limited amount that they can apply for in exemplary grants, they're able to use their staff, the site dollars, a little better. And maybe we do put more money into the exemplary grants for the teachers. Thank you.
I think, if I could just summarize, I think what we want to do is we want to protect the staff development money for staff development purposes, and we want to have both parties have a say in it, and I think that's the goal we're trying to achieve, and I'm not sure if this does it, but I think that those goals in mind, we could move forward, and Senator Ms. Allschweiger, you must be going to run for higher office or something.
Mr. Chair, we have done a survey. Actually, it's not ourselves. We actually worked with another outside group that I don't know if I'm at liberty to say at this point, that is incredibly compelling. And I want to just put that out on the table, because I don't have authority at this point to share the results. But I will go back and try to get that, and if as long as it's ready to be released, because I think the other organization is putting the finishing touches on it, it will be incredibly compelling about the 50-25-25. So I would like to share that with you if possible.
Okay. Senator Scogin, do you want to make the motion to lay this on the table? And obviously, we're going to take another look at this as we move forward. But
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate File 783 to be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, on Senator Scogin's motion on Senate File 783, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time and consideration today.
Senator Scheid has some members here, and we have Senator Bonhoeff's bill, and then I think that should do it for the Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, this is Senate File 791. Oh, ouch. Sorry. It's a nail sticking out of my hair.
Ouch. Is there a nurse in the...
no, I think I'm going to be okay.
Room?
It's going to bleed. Anyway. I'm not sure how, but I think the legislature used to fund on a line the Minnesota Humanities Commission. And I believe it was in 2003 when we stopped doing that. And I don't know that you got funding them, but we reinstated, through best practices, a grant to them, and I believe they've received $400,000 each of the last 2 years. And I think I carried that legislation for you. Thank you. I know we're really strapped for time. I have to tell you that I have a passion for this. I mean, humanities, as far as I'm, the humanities are what makes life meaningful. I call humanities the thinking part of life, kind of the wondering and the reflecting, the questioning, the imagining. And I think at this time in our history, we would particularly need to concentrate on them. The Minnesota Humanities Commission has been doing some wonderful things. I'm going to let these people tell you exactly what they're going to do because of less resources, fewer resources, they've had to sharpen their focus, and that's what they're about. And I think I would like them to tell you what they're going to do with the money. Mr. Romanstein will begin, and then we have two who are representing. One's an executive director of a charter school, and the other's a teacher in Red Wing.
Thank you, Senator Scheid. I believe the funding went through the best practices.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's
in the department, and I think that's on page 127 in the budget books. Mr. Romanstein.
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. My name is Stanley Romanstein. I'm president of the Minnesota Humanities Commission. Thank you for an opportunity to speak very briefly in support of Senate File 791. The Minnesota Humanities Commission has adopted a singular focus, strengthening E-12 education throughout Minnesota. We work with educators and schools to create strong programs in the humanities, programs in American history, world history, geography, languages and literature, ethics, civics, and social studies, strong programs in the humanities to accomplish two things. One, we are doing our part to close the achievement gap between Minnesota students of color and their classmates. It's easy to understand that the humanities make a difference in building essential vocabulary, in promoting critical and creative thinking, in defining fundamental problem-solving skills, but it's not just our opinion that the humanities do that. A 4-year longitudinal study of our work conducted by the Wilder Research Center concluded that strong humanities programs do begin to close the achievement gap between students of color and their classmates, and that they promote measurable and sustainable gains in both reading and math. The Wilder report indicates that students in each of the 9 schools involved in our program showed, quote, statistically significant gains in reading and math every year. And I do have a handout summarizing the Wilder findings. We're very proud of the work that we do with Minnesota schools and educators, and we're grateful that both local and national research supports our contention that a strong grounding in the humanities makes a positive, measurable, and sustainable difference in student performance. So first, we're doing our part to close the achievement gap. Second, we make it possible for Minnesota students to succeed by creating opportunities for their teachers to gain the new knowledge they need to teach in today's classrooms. As the saying goes, you cannot teach what you don't know. Our state class education standards require students and their teachers to acquire in-depth knowledge about an incredible array of subjects: Native American history and culture, the industrialization of China, the principles of American democracy. And it's not just high school teachers that we require to be content specialists. We're asking similar feats of elementary teachers. Knowing a little bit about a lot is not sufficient in the 21st century. We expect educators to know and to teach our children a lot about even more. Teachers expect the Minnesota Humanities Commission to be there to help them master the new knowledge they need. We help teachers address the what of education as opposed to the how of teaching. Traditionally, we've provided access to new knowledge by creating 18 to 20 residential seminars each year. The younger generation of teachers, the 23 and 24-year-olds who are taking their places in Minnesota's classrooms in record numbers, tell us that while they value those residential seminars, they might be able to attend 1 or 2 seminars in a year, but they want and need the knowledge available through all of our seminars. They're asking us to podcast the information, to make it available to them online and on demand, to live stream from our website, to package and distribute knowledge to them through a variety of media. Senate File 791 asks you to provide funding for those very initiatives. In the past year, more than 700 educators, about half of whom came from Greater Minnesota, took advantage of our professional development seminars. They work with about 56,000 teachers throughout the state. Our job at the Humanities Commission is to listen to Minnesota's educators, to understand what they need, to find the best minds in Minnesota, scholars at our colleges and universities, experts in the field, to bring them together with teachers and to share that knowledge with educators through the state through every possible and effective means, and of course to find the funding to make those efforts possible. Our work does make it possible for Minnesota's kids to succeed by creating opportunities for their teachers to acquire the new knowledge they need to teach in today's classrooms. I'm joined this morning by two colleagues, Sabrina Williams, the Executive Director of the Excel Academy of Higher Learning located in Brooklyn Park, and Gretchen Anderson, a music specialist from Burnside Elementary School in Red Wing. Ms. Williams and Ms. Anderson are going to speak about their experiences with the Humanities Commission, about the difference our work has made to them, to their schools, and to the children they teach. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Romanstein. This is in the governor's recommendations, and so I think we realize the importance of the work that you're doing. So if you want to add some very brief comments, and I apologize for the condensed time that we have, but give your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Sabrina Williams, and I am the Executive Director of Excel Academy Charter School. And I'll just briefly say that partnering with an organization like the Humanities Commission is what has contributed to our success. Excel Academy started with 65 students 6 years ago, K through 4, and now we serve students pre-K through 6th grade with over 345 students. The Humanities Commission has been part of our organization since our beginning years, our first year. Unlike most schools, we've had the opportunity to work with them. The Humanities Commission has served in the beginning as type of mentors to our new teacher. 95% of our new teachers when we started were first-year teachers. The Humanities Commission was there to help with curriculum implementation, lesson planning. Because of our relationship with them over the past 6 years, we have seen an increase in test scores, both on the MCAs and our standardized NWEA tests. Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments and Northwest Evaluation Assessments also. We've also seen our students in kindergarten, feedback from parents saying how much their students, our children are learning, even teaching their parents things about the humanities that parents didn't know themselves. So we appreciate and we are so glad that we can be here to help with the Humanities Commission and serve this purpose. Yes, Mr. Chair, and our school serves 88% of our students that we serve are eligible for free and reduced lunch. 50% of our students are of Native African families. 45% are African American, and 5% are a combination of Hispanic, Caucasian, and Asian families.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And if you could give your name for the record.
And morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Gretchen Anderson. I am an elementary music teacher in Red Wing. I teach at Burnside School, which has a population of about 620 students in grades 3, 4, and 5. About 28% of those students are on free and reduced lunch. We have about 20, 25 Hispanic students, 36 Native American, 6 Asian, and about 30 African American students. As Senator Scheid said, she has a passion for the humanities. I have to add that my passion is for the Humanities Commission. I have taken several wonderful seminars over the years. The first one I took was in 1993, before the commission even had its present building in St. Paul, and have had a variety of experiences in teaching world religions, African-American music, spirituals, jazz, blues. That's what our spring concert is focusing on. I have to say that my most recent accumulation of seminars has been in the Native American category. The commission has put on multiple offerings in Dakota and Ojibwe history and culture in the last 4 or 5 years, of which I've been a participant of. Red Wing and Burnside School is within about 5 miles of the Prairie Island Indian community, the Dakota community, and my students have benefited from the seminars that I have taken, not only the Native students, but the population in general. And, you know, as a teacher, I have to bring some props along, so pardon me while I dump out my books in my bags today. I thought I would show off. Each one of these folders represents one of the seminars that I have taken over the years. So if they spill over, then you know that my knowledge will spill over into the schools, too. So it's quite an array, an impressive array of things that I've gathered and has had as a gift from the commission, let me say. I will focus briefly on probably the most fulfilling is to be bringing my colleagues along to the commission sessions. Last year, I brought a school librarian along to the session on choosing appropriate American Indian literature. In January, I brought three other classroom colleagues to the teaching about American Indians in the elementary grades, which has been the ripple, you know, the one pebble, that's me in the pond, and the ripple going out to my colleagues, which of course then goes out to the entire school population and to the families too. And one last offering I can say, with the field trips, the quality of the education that I've received with the commission, the speakers are top-notch. We've been taken on wonderful field trips. I have had the opportunity then to take my Dakota students and their families on two field trips that have been wonderful, one to the Minnesota History Center on the Seth Eastman painting the Dakota life at Fort Snelling in the early years for the Dakota people, and probably one of the more amazing ones was, where did it go? My folder. The one I want to show you on, at the Minnesota Institute of Arts. I brought my students and their families to the most amazing display of Plains honor shirts. So for my children and their parents to see a part of their actual history in the Art Institute was a pretty moving experience. And had I not gone to the same display via the Humanities Commission, that ripple would not have been set in motion. So once again, what I have learned has been able to be transcended to our community. And if we can bridge a five-mile gulf from Burnside School to Prairie Island with the community, all the better for it. Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. And I think
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make the motion.
Senator Scheid moves that Senate File 1167.
No, 791.
Yes, thank you.
791 be recommended for, laid on the table and be recommended for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Education Bill. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Thank you very much, and I apologize. We did not get to Senate File 1167, Senator Bonhoff's bill. We will put that on first on Tuesday, and I just don't think it would be. We have several people that have come. They're not traveling, but they're here, and I think we need to give them adequate time to talk about the issue. So. All right, thank you, committee members, for sitting and listening and participating, and also for the public. The committee is adjourned.